I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. In the culture in which I was raised, making a fuss was considered something that could only invite personal embarrassment. I can hear my mother's words, "Stop it! You're making a fool of yourself." Probably more accurately, what she meant was, "Stop it, you're making a fool of me." If you made a fuss, in effect, you were drawing attention to yourself. And that was tantamount to inviting some form of social judgment. Consequently, I am someone who hardly ever makes a fuss, at least not in public. My only exception to this rule is in expensive restaurants when I feel condescended to by the waiter. However, I often find myself ruminating, going over in my mind repeatedly what I should have said, what I should to this person, what I should have done in that situation. If only I had been less inhibited by my fear of drawing attention by making a fuss. As we travel through the enveloping cool of autumn, a season that always conjures up for me Keats's ode to autumn, "Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, close bosom friend of the maturing sun, conspiring with him how to load and bless with fruit the vines that round the thatch eaves run." And I'm mindful of autumn as a season for renewal, for taking spiritual inventory, to remember all the blessings of our lives. And last week, I offered something of an extended meditation on the inner conflict between the experience of scarcity and, or the fear of scarcity and the actual experience of abundance. And I commended to us the passage from Matthew where Jesus tells us that where our treasure is, there also we will find our hearts. Because paradoxically, the spiritual life is not about money, but financial generosity is one of the key fruits of a spiritual life lived seriously. Because what we choose to do or not to do with our resources, the resources that actually are not ours, but they are given to us by God in trust, whatever we do or not do proclaims to the world what our values are, where we want to place our values, and from which we want to draw value. Those of you, and I know in this congregation there are many, who have been involved professionally in the investment industry, you will know that low investment leads only to a poor return. And so in the Gospel this morning, we come to the story about Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, and its setting is on the outskirts of the historic city of Jericho. This is a multi-layered story in a sequence of multi-layered stories that Mark offers us concerning Jesus' road trip to Jerusalem. Jesus' journey from Galilee to Jerusalem is, for those who travel with him, the road on which they are apprenticed as disciples. And Mark recounts a number of incidents along the way that highlight the tensions within the disciples and by extension also within us. As we hear the call to discipleship, we hear it, we move towards it, only to find ourselves pulling back. One step forward, two steps back, or if we're lucky, two steps forward, one step back. And Mark chronicles these events along the way as events of blindness and clear-sightedness, of fear and hope, of the fear of not being seen and the desire to be seen too much. Like all these experiences, the healing of the physically blind becomes a metaphor for another kind of blindness, the blindness of mind and heart, a blindness repeatedly displayed by the disciples. You see, Bartimaeus is not only blind, he's poor. He's poor materially, but he's also considered poor spiritually, because in the religious culture of his time, to have any kind of physical illness was considered to be a sign of sin. Bartimaeus has placed himself on the road, by the side of the road, so as not to be missed as Jesus passes by. And when Jesus approaches, he begins to make a fuss, and as others try with some severity to silence him, "Be quiet, Bartimaeus, you're making a fool of yourself," his crescendo of fuss-making only increases. Bartimaeus sits by the roadside on the outskirts of Jericho, which in the 6th chapter of the book of Joshua, we are told, was the first town to fall to the Israelites, who leveled its walls by making a huge fuss of feet tramping, trumpets blaring, and voices shouting. On the roadside, on the outskirts of Jericho, Bartimaeus sits, making a commotion, as he calls repeatedly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus is moving through this huge throng of people, and he's halted in his tracks. He hears Bartimaeus cry, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And this is one of the early recognitions in Mark's gospel of Jesus' messianic secret, because unlike the disciples, Bartimaeus knows who Jesus is. And turning around, he looks for the source of the voice, and spying Bartimaeus, he says, "Call him to me." And Bartimaeus wastes no time. One of the characteristics of the way Mark writes his gospel is that he's very fond of the continuous present tense of the verb. So he loves to describe action. And here he conveys the immediacy of Bartimaeus' response. He doesn't say that Bartimaeus throws off his cloak and gets up and goes to Jesus. He says, throwing off his cloak, Bartimaeus sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus asks him the proverbial discipleship question. "What do you want me to do for you?" And compare Bartimaeus' response to that of James and John to the same question reported by Mark in last week's incident along the road, where they reply, "Lord, let one of us sit on your right and the other on your left." Bartimaeus simply says, "My rabbi, let me see again." Whenever we respond to the call of discipleship, Jesus asks us, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And unlike Bartimaeus, we will often not know how to answer. For me, the point of the story lies in my recognition that Bartimaeus receives his sight through an experience of the miraculous, but viewed another way, this is an experience of what we might better term realignment. You see, realignment describes the opening of the heart and the clearing of the mind through investing emotional significance in a person, an object, a cause, or an activity. Realignment comes from investment. And Bartimaeus becomes deeply invested in the one his heart has been longing for. The intensity of his yearning heart creates a moment in which he experiences a profound realignment in his world, a consequence of which is he begins to see again. To obtain that which our hearts yearn requires of us investment leading to realignment. Realignment results when stepping outside our sense of the socially conformist, that which is expected of us, and staying within the boundaries of what we fear will happen if we step outside them. We step outside to make a fuss, and we risk the social consequences of doing so. But what then, after making a fuss? The next step is to enter into the space that's opened up, that's cleared. Bartimaeus' heart moves from yearning via commotion-making to investment in the one for whom he has been longing, and through becoming invested in Jesus, he now enters upon the experience of discipleship. It's no coincidence that the renewal of our stewardship falls within the season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. In this season, we are invited to thanksgiving, to locate the source of our gratitude for the rich fruits that we enjoy. Locate our source of gratitude for these in God. In this season, we are invited to give thanks as we renew and reflect on our spiritual priorities. In this season, when giving thanks for the fruits that load the vines that run around and through our lives, we open the possibility for spiritual and emotional realignment. Jesus asks, "What is it you want me to do for you?" Yearning and longing for what? Maybe we don't quite know, but longing to discover. The possibility for personal and communal realignment is in this autumn air. Can you sense it?